Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Freaks and Geeks. If you're new to our show, please head on over to Facebook and give us a like. Tonight, I am joined by Chris, and April hopefully will be joining us later. She is working in D.C. and got caught up. Christopher? Are you with us? Okay, seems like Chris might not be with us either. Let's see. Okay.
Hello?
Yes, now we're cooking.
Oh, yes.
Please welcome
the travel woes of our clan, our family clan, are abundant this week.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, we're going to make it through it.
Hopefully.
Fingers crossed. So let's kind of go ahead and let our topic be known tonight. We're going to get into a place that is near and dear to my heart. I don't know about you, Chris.
Well, I mean, I've been...
The first place I met you.
Let's see. I think I've been to the location we will be discussing tonight like three times so far.
Okay.
And I can sense, like, anytime I go with you or April, like, just... the love that you have for it and like the memories it brings back. I myself am a bit more leery when it comes to cemeteries, but I mean,
oh, really?
You walk around and you walk around and you see like tons of people just like hanging out in the cemetery, and I was like, oh, if that's your jam, that's where you find peace and quiet. You do you.
Okay. Well, Hollywood Cemetery. Presidents, vampires, and more. After the jump. Welcome back. Let's jump right into our topic tonight. Richmond, Virginia's very own garden cemetery, Hollywood Cemetery. This is the second most visited cemetery in the United States, surpassed only by Arlington National Cemetery, and it stands on what was once part of William Byrd III's estate. Later, it was owned by the Harvey family, and the area was known as Harvey's Woods.
That sounds foreboding.
It does. I don't know a lot about Harvey, but I feel like I need to check him out. Founded by Richmonders William Hacksaw and Joshua Fry, the cemetery was created when the duo were inspired by a recent visit to Mount Auburn Cemetery near Boston. Impressed by the solemn grandeur of Mount Auburn, Hacksaw and Fry decided to open a similar cemetery on the outskirts of Richmond. Together with 40 prominent Richmond subscribers, they started a company that would later become known as the Hollywood Cemetery Company. Notable architect John Notman of Philadelphia was enlisted to design the cemetery. He suggested the name Hollywood due to the large amount of holly trees that dotted its hills. The first notable burial in Hollywood Cemetery came after great effort by Governor Henry Wise, who was also buried there, to repatriate the remains of President James Monroe from the New York City Marble Cemetery to his native Virginia in 1856. The state appropriated the funds, and in 1858, Monroe's remains were transported to Richmond aboard the steamship Jamestown. His final resting place is a simple granite sarcophagus that sets up on a granite platform. Surrounding the sarcophagus is an elaborate Gothic Revival cast iron cage. The tomb, erected in 1859, was designed by the German-born architect Albert Liebrock, and its cast iron elements were cast by Wood and Perot of Philadelphia. The tomb is considered architecturally significant, first for the scale of its use of cast iron, a material not commonly used at that time for that purpose, and for the delicacy and degree of flamboyancy achieved in its creation, which could not have been done in stone. In 2015, as a part of plans to celebrate the 200th anniversary of Monroe's election as America's fifth president, Monroe's tomb received a $900,000 makeover from the Department of General Services in the state of Virginia. Almost 40% of the tomb's cast iron structure was repaired, and the entire structure was returned to a color closer to its original state. The restoration took close to a year to complete and was finished in September 2016. They did a wonderful job on the restoration. It was black from just layers upon layers of paint, and now it's like a nice kind of like pearl color almost.
I don't think I saw it before they did the restoration, because I think the first time I went and saw the tomb was... I think it had to have been after that. I think October maybe had been the first time that I'd gone there, somewhere in that time frame.
Okay. Well, I will post some before and after.
Very nice.
Page.
It's very nice.
Well, hello. So glad I could finally make it. Jeez, man. Just
welcome.
Hello. I'm so ready to talk about Hollywood Cemetery. How are you? How was your week? Hello, everyone.
Good.
Hello, my husband. I have not seen you in weeks. I haven't seen you in a long time. How are you? Have you grown a lot of hair?
I mean, no.
Have you gone silver yet?
No, not yet.
Okay, well, I mean, I guess we got that going for us.
Not quite Rumpelstiltskin, right?
No, I'm not that wrinkly either. Although it would be a shame for you to miss this episode, April, considering this is probably one of your favorite places in the world.
It is. You're absolutely right about that. Yep, both Carrie and I are, you know, kind of nuts about it.
It's definitely one of my favorite places to be.
Yep.
So we started talking about James Monroe's tomb. Would you
Indeed.
Like to tell us what Charles Stansfield Jr. has to say?
What Charles Stansfield? Well, According to Charles Stansfield Jr. in his book, Haunted Presidents, Ghosts in the Lives of the Chief Executives, James Monroe has seen frequently the site, or has been seen frequenting the site of his not-so-final resting place. He writes, "The ghost, like the once-living man, is an imposing figure, 6 feet tall and of muscular build. Intelligence seems to shine from his eyes as the phantom surveys his surroundings. At first, it seems as though the spirit is trapped inside an elaborate cage, a Gothic scrollwork of iron, but the wispy ghost passes through the ironwork as though it were not there. Ghosts are not restricted by material barriers in space."
Who knew?
Or time.
Hashtag mind-blowing.
You gotta think for Monroe's time, he had to have been a gigantic man. Like,
why?
6 foot, that, like way above.
So
like, 6 feet would have to be like way above normal people at that time, though.
Well, there's that whole mythos about, oh, people used to be shorter, which, yeah, I guess, but he was 6 foot. George Washington was 6 foot. Thomas Jefferson was 6 foot. I mean, it wasn't...
No pattern here.
It wouldn't be... Well, on the flip side, you know, James Madison was 5'4", so...
Well, yeah. How tall was Lincoln? Wasn't he, like, 6'5", or something like that? He was crazy tall.
6'3", I believe.
I believe his nickname was Long Lincoln.
Lord Jesus, coming in clutch, Chris. You got it. And this is it. This is our. I've got an audience right now. So, my buddy Stephanie. For those that are listening, my buddy Stephanie. I'm staying at her house right now, and so I'm doing my podcast in front of her, and it's actually incredibly awkward because I just sound like I'm having a really rambunctious, feisty conversation on the phone, I think. Like that.
Because she's only hearing your side, right?
Yeah, because she's hearing all of us, but she, you know, like, it's just weird. It's not like a regular phone conversation, I think. Yeah.
Because it's on the internet.
Because it's on the internet. Everything good is on the internet. Well, back to it. Monroe's ghost is not particularly notable, rather like the man himself. His ghost at Hollywood Cemetery seems to be quietly reflective and is reported by some to be thoughtfully rubbing his left shoulder as though massaging an old wound, which he was actually wounded at the Battle of Trenton. He was shot in the left shoulder and carried the bullet in him for the rest of his life, so that would actually make perfect sense.
He was, in fact, the only founding father to have sustained a serious injury in the Revolutionary War.
That's because he's hardcore.
Hardcore.
He's hardcore. I mean, he would get like a 30-point veterans preference if he was applying for jobs.
That is true. He'd probably get pretty good percentage, too.
Yeah, he definitely would.
So yeah, before you came on, we were talking about how Monroe's tomb used to be, like, before they restored it, like, really grimy. And Carrie, I think, was saying, like, almost black.
Oh, yeah, it was solidly black. I think it just probably 36 layers of black paint were holding it together.
What, they just kept painting over it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess kind of like they repaint, you know, the Eiffel Tower to keep the rust from getting it, kind of thing.
Well, I think that Hollywood Cemetery was not quite as in vogue as it is now. Like, right now, it's actually a really popular place to go. Back in the day, me and Carrie were the only two weirdos that were hanging out in Hollywood Cemetery, as well as the Satan worshippers, which I'm pretty sure we'll get into later. But, like, we were the only weirdos that would go to Hollywood Cemetery and hang out. So, but now, you know, with the advent of the hipsters and downtown Richmond being kind of like the hipster capital of the East Coast, it's It's become extremely popular, and so they have restored a lot of the old history there and a lot of the old graves. And that's, you know, a blessing and a curse. I mean, you can't go there anymore and have solace. There's people everywhere, everywhere. So I'm sure that that's part of the reason why they, like, reinvigorated some of the more well-known graves. But it is absolutely beautiful. It always reminds me, like, James Monroe's grave always reminds me of the movie Crawl. Have you ever seen that?
No.
I don't think so.
All right, well, I'm going to post a picture on our webpage so y'all will know that I'm not nuts and that it actually looks like Kroll. I'm going to do a side-by-side. We'll get it done.
Well, I'm going to post the before and after pictures.
Okay. Yeah, do it.
Well, I guess since we've covered James Monroe, we should cover another pretty notable man who is interred, if that's the right phrase.
Yeah.
So near James Monroe lies the remains of another Virginia-born president, that of John Tyler, which actually, April, I think me and you have been by the plantation he was born at, weren't we? Like when we were going to one of our ghost hunts?
Maybe.
It's Sherwood Forest. That's where he lived. It's on Route 5.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yep, it's really close to Edgewood.
Yep.
Yeah, because you keep seeing signs as, like, John Tyler.
Yeah, I actually went to John Tyler Community College.
There you go.
So he's big. He's big around these parts.
So John Tyler, the 10th president of the United States, was buried at Hollywood Cemetery in 1862. His death was the only one in presidential history to not be officially recognized in Washington, D.C. because of his allegiance to the Confederate States of America. He requested a simple burial, but Confederate President Jefferson Davis hosted a grand event complete with a Confederate flag draped over the coffin. His monument stands not far from President Monroe's and President's Circle. While Tyler's spirit has not been seen in Hollywood Cemetery, it has been seen in the White House. Speaking of Confederate President Jefferson Davis, he is also buried at Hollywood Cemetery, and he is not very far from President Monroe and President Tyler's gravesite. And I think, if I remember rightly, they are redoing his site?
Yes, they are. I was there probably like 2 weeks ago, and they kind of have it all cordoned off where they're redoing it.
Yeah, so that would be interesting to see what it looks like after they're done. But, like everywhere around President Jefferson Davis, there's, like, I think a bunch of the Confederate generals and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Fitzhugh Lee is there.
Yeah, there's a ton.
So 18 months after President Jefferson Davis's death, and temporary burial in New Orleans Mechere Cemetery, Davis's widow, Verena, decided the final burial place was to be Richmond's Hollywood Cemetery, considered the National Cemetery of the Confederacy. His remains removed. His remains were removed from the vault. What?
Jesus Christ, I didn't know, and then I got excited, and then I talked over you. I'm sorry.
No, please continue.
No, I just wanted to say that I didn't know that, and I was excited about that fact. I didn't know.
Well,
I didn't mean to make a big deal. I didn't mean it. I didn't mean to.
Well, that isn't Richmond. Richmond was the capital of the Confederacy, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
It was, yeah. You're absolutely right.
So I guess it would make sense that that's where they would consider their quote-unquote national cemetery. Let's see. His remains were removed from the vault in New Orleans and placed on a flag-draped caisson, escorted by honor guards composed of his old soldiers to Memorial Hall, where he would lay state. The next day, as thousands of people silently watched from the sidewalks and balconies, the caisson bore his body to a waiting funeral train. On the way, bonfires beside the tracks lit up the ranks of Davis's old soldiers standing in attention beside stacked arms. In Richmond, gray-haired veterans escorted him to the Virginia State House, where thousands filed past in respect before internment. Davis seems to be at rest, as his spirit has not been seen, but the ghost of his 5-year-old son is alleged to haunt the White House of the Confederacy, which is also located in Richmond and is now a museum. That would be interesting to see. Which museum is it? Or is it just called, like,
Museum of the Confederacy? It's just called White House of the Confederacy, and it's part of the American Civil War Museum, which is in multiple sites, but it also includes Tredegar Iron Works, and it's also part of the same group that runs the Civil War Museum that is at Appomattox.
Hmm. Learn something new every day. I wonder why his son's ghost would haunt that. But I guess that would maybe have been where his son died. If he was the president of the Confederacy, that would have been where he stayed.
Yes. So it was the White House of the Confederacy, and his son, when he was 5, he did die in the house. I think that he fell off of a balcony. Actually, all of his children died before him except one daughter. Only one of their children, a daughter, lived into adulthood. And, he did fall outside of the mansion in 1864.
Ooh. It's a harsh way to go.
Yeah.
Did we lose April, or she just
keep No, crying? I'm here. I'm listening to you guys talk about dying. It's good. It's good. I have no comment. Okay. I don't know. There's worse ways to go, but, you know.
So in 1863, Hollywood became one of the largest cemeteries in Richmond for military interments during the Civil War. Unfortunately, in 1865, all of the cemetery's records, which were kept at the treasurer's office in Richmond, were burned by the fleeing Confederates when they set fire to the city. A year later, the Hollywood Ladies Memorial Association was founded to care for the graves of the 18,000, let me just repeat that, 18,000 Confederate soldiers buried in the cemetery. The association that's an insane amount.
That's 18,000.
It is 18,000. The association reinterred an estimated 3,000 soldiers from the Gettysburg battlefield to Hollywood between 1872 and 1873. The remains were transported by steamship in 6 separate shipments.
Do you imagine being on the boat that's got a bunch of, like, old people, like,
remains,
like corpses in you on it,
yeah, that are like a decade old.
Yeah, that. Oh yeah, and those are going to be nice and decayed. I'm sure the smell was fantastic.
Probably it contributed to the funk of Richmond. The overall.
That sounds Richmond like a funk. Band.
If it's not, I bet it will be by the end of this episode. So it's actually in the Confederate section that I had an experience of that at Hollywood. I spend a lot of time there, and I enjoy the history and beauty, of course, but I also find cemeteries in general just to be very relaxing places. Maybe because the residents
because people
dead.
Don't talk to you.
Well, I mean that too, because they can't decide if I'm a ghost or a real life person, which, I mean, understandable. I kind of decided I was going to make myself a Ghost of Hollywood Cemetery and just lurk outside of the entrance and, you know, offer to give people tours.
Greet people as they walk in?
Yeah, I just kind of lurk outside of the entrance, offer to give people tours, and then, you know, they would call back and be like, oh, my friend Martha, she told me about this wonderful tour guide here, Carrie. You know, I'd like to have a tour with her. And they'd be like, we don't have any tour guides here with that name. So then I would just become, you know, a ghost father secretary.
And then we'd have a story of Carrie the ghost.
That's right. It'd be extra mysterious because there's nobody there with my name. Anyway, back to the experience that I had in the Confederate section. So, like I was saying, cemeteries are like super relaxing places to me, and maybe it's because most of the residents are dead and mostly gone, but I don't feel what I will call the buzz feeling that I feel when I'm around the living. Maybe it's the electricity, I don't know. I have lots of theories. Anyway. One day, I was in the Confederate area in what I thought was an unoccupied section near a dip in the land that I think was a part of the bed of the creek that used to run through the land the cemetery is on. It was sunny out, so I found a nice spot under a tree, and I was laying on my stomach on the ground reading a book, as you do, and I felt like someone was standing over me. I then saw their shadow on the ground, felt a presence. So I rolled over, you know, ready to go, and didn't see what I was expecting. I looked up and saw what I can only describe as a gray, like, tangled cloud. Like, not quite fog, but, like, you ever seen, like, the old comic strips where it's, like a cloud, like the cloud that surrounds Pigpen from, like, the Peanuts cartoons? Like, almost like that.
So it's like a cloud that was kind of held together.
Yeah, kind of like a tangle of yarn mixed with, like, a cloud, I guess, is kind of, like, the only way I can kind of describe it. But it felt to me like it was a mass of multiple beings filled with, like, confusion and sadness, and it disappeared, you know, when I blinked. So as I stood up to walk back towards the road that snakes through the section of the cemetery, I passed a small sign marking the place I had been enjoying my book at as the location of the 3,000 soldiers that were reinterred in a mass grave from the Battle of Gettysburg. So I told them I was sorry and that I had meant to disturb them.
Well, maybe they were excited. They were like, we haven't had a lady lay on us in years.
It was more like, what the fuck is this?
Carrie, your milkshake brings little ghosts to the yard.
I mean, apparently, yeah. It's worth getting up 150 years later
have
for.
To take it. Just have to lay there.
Yeah.
I think that was kind of the MO at the time. So, in 1869, the Ladies Memorial Association dedicated the Pyramid, a massive granite monument to the soldiers that are buried there. The famed 90-foot pyramid is made with large blocks of James River granite. And the pyramid is an architectural marvel, despite or perhaps because it was built with no bonding whatsoever. The whispers of the dead, though, are what have made it infamous. There are endless reports that a burst of ice-cold air can be felt along the pyramid's rear wall. Of the 18,000 soldiers buried nearby, 11,000 remain unidentified, and some say their restless spirits are trapped in a spectral loop around the obelisk. Disembodied moans at dawn and dusk have also been reported. The pyramid itself took a year to build, and there were many accidents during the construction. Thomas Stanley, a Lynchburg convict working with the construction crew, made the perilous climb to the top to lower the capstone into place. The plaque reads, "A Memorial to the Confederate Women of Virginia, 1861 to 1865. The legislature of Virginia, 1914, has at the solicitation of Ladies Hollywood Memorial Association and United Daughters of the Confederacy of Virginia, placed in perpetual care this section where lie buried 18,000 Confederate soldiers. I'm sorry.
a chapter in Harry Collatz Jr.'s book, True Richmond Stories. He retold the tale of the Capstone's placement and how prisoner Thomas Stanley, assumed to have come from the nearby state penitentiary on Gamble's Hill, volunteered to perform the dangerous honor. And thus it was that a horse thief came to be on the work gang for Dimmock's Pyramid. The knots in the hoisting ropes were tied too close to the top, and the stone wouldn't go past them. Stanley poured water on the ropes, causing them to shrink the needed inches. Then, as a breathless crowd watched, the prisoner put himself between the massive hanging rock in the pyramid and righted the stone to its seat. Everyone that has heard of this legend assumes that Stanley went free after his accomplishment. Collatz's story cleared that up somewhat. In the release box of his prison schedule, the simple penciled notation reads, "Transferred." There's no mention of when or where. A romantic notion suggests itself. The warden opened a gate and told Stanley to go and never come back. Ironically, Stanley's grandson later became a governor of Virginia.
Synchronicities, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah. The day has been full of them.
Yeah, that pyramid is something to see, though.
It's very impressive to have no bond holding it together, just the fitting of the stones together. Like, it really is a marvel.
Yeah, I know. Like, and it's crazy that it survived this long with, like, no incident.
Yeah, I mean, now it just makes me want to, whenever I hear it, you know, just like, you in danger. Like, maybe don't go touch the stones. Maybe just leave the stones alone. Just admire them from afar. That's a good idea for that one. Let's
not bother the stones.
Yeah, there's a lot there. Well, just outside the Confederate section is one of the Hollywood's saddest hauntings. In February of 1862, a 2-year-old girl named Florence Reeves died of scarlet fever. The cause of Florence's death was common in the 19th century. Thus, it is not as remarkable as the conspicuous statue keeping watch over her grave. A life-sized black cast iron Newfoundland dog is situated on the right side, and there are two conflicting explanations for its presence. The first story suggests that an anonymous shopkeeper, remembering how much Florence had loved the dog, perched in front of his store on Main Street when she visited her father, decided to bequeath the statue as a testament to Florence's kind heart. The second story, though not as sentimental, asserts that Florence's father, Thomas, installed the dog statue in his daughter's grave to prevent it from being melted down for bullets during the war. Because materials were in short supply, a chunk of iron so large would surely have been pilfered. But Thomas Reeves, assuming that no one would dare insult the memory of a 2-year-old, placed it in Hollywood Cemetery. There has never been a definitive answer for the dog's company. Still, those who paid their respects claim to hear random barking near Florence's final resting place, while those who lean too close to the grave have heard growling. The dog's position is also said to change, sometimes facing the opposite way, perhaps to protect the little beneath. Another canine haunting of the cemetery is said to occur near the grave of Ellen Glasgow. Ellen Glasgow was a Richmond native and a novelist who wrote 20 novels and won the Pulitzer Prize for Literature in 1942. She died in November of 1945, and one of the instructions in her will was that her two beloved dogs who had died several years before be dug up from her backyard and buried with her. Her wishes were fulfilled, and nighttime visitors to the cemetery swear they can hear small dogs running around and whining at their owner's gravesite. It is so sweet.
Puppy goat.
I've heard several variations of the story with the little girl. Like, I've heard her name was Elizabeth, Florence, Bernadine, and that she died of scarlet fever during the Civil War, or that she died of Spanish flu during World War I. So, per the usual, I did some investigating. Her marker actually gives her name as Florence Bernadina Reeves. She was born the 24th of June in 1860 to Thomas R. Reeves and his wife Elizabeth, and she died February 7th, 1862.
I tried to track down some more information about her parents to see if I could find like a possible place of employment for her father or find where they live to try to narrow down, you know, where the dog came from. And I was able to find her parents' marriage record and her father's enlistment records for the Civil War, but no luck with any other information.
I don't know if they were as prudent in record keeping back then as they are nowadays.
You know, sometimes. It depends on the area and what happened and what got burned. And
So would it be, because I've heard another iteration of that story. I think the one that I was told when I first, like, went to Hollywood Cemetery with you guys was that that was her dog. And it watched over her when she fell ill, and then the dog, like, would refuse to eat after she died.
Yeah, that's very true.
That's the iteration that I was told.
And you were told by me, weren't you? So that
what?
Might explain. I said you were told by me, weren't you? So that would explain why we both have the same tradition.
Yes. Yes. I believe that is the case.
I think there's just no surviving known evidence of enough information to know really what the story is.
Well, sometimes it's just fun to kind of make up your own stories. Fill the holes with your own story.
Yeah, yeah. And I kind of like every other piece of folklore that builds up, you know, there's some truth in there. And, you know, hopefully one day somebody will find that one slip of paper that totally fills in the blanks in the story.
Well, maybe one day. But we've covered some presidents, and then we've covered a little bit of a sad tale. I think now it's time we get to a more mischievous resident of the Hollywood Cemetery. So arguably the most notorious haunting in Hollywood is that of the Richmond Vampire. The legend can be traced to the Fractal Church Tunnel, Church Hill Tunnel collapse on October 2nd, 1925. The tunnel opened in 1875 and was part of the old Chesapeake and Ohio Railway. Initial construction was nightmarish due to in part to Virginia's clay soil, which would change with the rainfall and would constantly cause frequent cave-ins. Years of persistent collapsing forced C&O Railway to seek a safer alternative. The company completed a riverfront viaduct in 1901, after which the Churchill Tunnel fell into virtual abandonment. That is, until 1925. It was in this year that officials decided to restore the tunnel to operational condition. During repairs on October 2nd, a collapse near the western end trapped a work train. Engineer Thomas Joseph Mason was killed, and others were never found. Three men, including fireman Benjamin F. Mosby, managed to escape through the east end of the tunnel. Mosby, who had been shoveling coal into the firebox of a steam locomotive, was seriously burned by a ruptured boiler. In the aftermath of the tragedy, strange reports started to arise. A local story alleged that a hideous creature with jagged teeth and hanging skin had emerged from the tunnel collapse and made its way towards the James River. Pursued by a mob, the creature darted into Hollywood Cemetery, where it vanished in the hillside mausoleum of one W.W. Poole. Poole was an 80-year-old bookkeeper at the time of his death in 1922, yet his mausoleum bears the year of 1913. The incongruous date supposedly marks the date of his wife's death, the folklorists believe that Poole himself was the Richmond Vampire, and that the omission of his own birth years is the proof of his immortality. The plausible explanation is that onlookers actually saw Benjamin Mosby emerge from the tunnel, his teeth broken and his skin seared and mangled from his injuries. Mosby died the day after the cave-in at Grace Hospital and is buried in Hollywood as well. After 8 days of rescue efforts, only the body of engineer Thomas Mason was recovered from the cave-in. Still, that hasn't stopped the enduring tale of Hollywood's vampire. To this day, wary visitors take photos of Poole's mausoleum, hoping to catch a glimpse of something unexpected to emerge from its door.
Ooh. Man. They will never believe me when I tell them about the Richmond vampire.
What, they just don't believe that it's a real thing?
Yeah.
Is it the ghost of Blog Talk attacking again?
I think the ghost of Blog Talk.
Is the Hollywood vampire sabotaging the show?
Knock on wood, we actually haven't had any really serious like drops or anything like that. The last several shows, like it's been a while since we've had something really terrible happen, which I definitely shouldn't have said because now it's gonna happen. But
yep, good job.
Not bad. Sorry. Well. Because the attention that the mausoleum of W.W. Poole was receiving, they actually had to reinter his remains elsewhere in the cemetery. Nobody knows where. Located nearby and up the hill from the mausoleum is a little metal door to the hillside that looks almost like a hobbit hole. There is no marker. Some have theorized that Poole has taken up residence uptown from his former resting place, but nobody really knows. The mystery.
The mausoleum's still there, but his remains are not?
Right.
Yeah, people kept breaking into the cemetery at night because the cemetery closes at 5 or thereabouts, and people would break into the cemetery at night or sneak into the cemetery at night and go break into his mausoleum.
Animal sacrifices and everything else.
Yeah, I was going to say, weren't there like people doing rituals and stuff in front of Hollywood vampire's resting place?
Yes.
Trying to summon him, I guess.
His dark power.
That's crazy. What? I don't get why you would do that. I guess if you really believe that's a place of magical power, but.
Well,
just disturbing to me.
Here's the thing. So another rumor that I've always heard about Poole is that he was kicked out of England for vampirism. But I did some pretty cursory research, and he actually came from Mississippi. He came to Richmond to work in the tobacco warehouses across the river from Hollywood and Manchester. It still kind of remains a mystery as to why or how Poole's mausoleum came to be known as the lair of the Richmond vampire. Because even if the creature that people saw was Mosby, he went to Grace Hospital, which, I mean, is kind of close to Hollywood, but not that close. Not like right next to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of his mausoleum. It's very nice, but it's not the biggest or the most elaborate. There's nothing like odd or out of place about it. So the only thing I can kind of come up with is, you know, maybe it cropped up around him because he was not a local. He was from somewhere else, and it's easier for a legend to build up around someone who doesn't have generations of familial ties to old Virginia to be like, oh, well, yeah, of course he's not a vampire. You know, his mother's over here, his grandfather's over here.
So are there still reports of people seeing the Hollywood vampire, or is it just sort of like he used to show up, but he doesn't anymore?
To my knowledge, there hasn't been a sighting of him since then. People, you know, still go and hang around the grave hoping to see him, but, I mean, even so, he's not even in there anymore.
Yeah, that is true. Well, I mean, he's still in Hollywood, isn't he?
He's still in Hollywood, but he's not in that mausoleum. There is, like, and I don't know if this is where he is, but up the hill and then kind of to the left of the mausoleum, there's, like, this little, it's like a metal door and, like, a frame built into the side of the hill, and there's no marker, there's no
stone, no anything there. It's just kind of this random thing built into the side of the hill. So I kind of think that's where his remains might be, but I don't know. That's just me venturing a guess.
Hmm. That's crazy. That would be a really cool story if it actually were true. But I think the biggest likely case would be definitely people heard the cave in, and then they come rushing to see what's happening, and then they just see this mangled man. How this man actually got out with the injuries that are he said to have sustained is beyond me.
Yeah, it's amazing
right
that
to a boiler and blows up. I mean, he's lucky to be just not dead on the spot, but to be able to climb his way out of a cave in, that's something that's superhuman. That's the adrenaline totally kicking in.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he was a big, fit Irishman, working in the
He had to have been beefy.
Oh, yeah. Otherwise, there's no way he even survived, the couple of days that he did, but...
Is that railway still in use? Like, that route still in use, or did they just say, screw it, we're not going through this?
It's not, and the tracks are gone from either side. One side is completely walled up. The other side is fenced in, and that's the collapsed side. A couple of years ago, a reporter here in Richmond, his name's Mark Holmberg, and he's pretty awesome if you want to look him up. He donned some, caving gear, and he has some experience with it, and took some other people in with him and kind of went in and explored part of it. And I'll post a link to his video to our Facebook page too. But the train's still in there, and so are the other workers. Like, they got the engineer out, but the other workers are still in there. And
like
probably
not
like
though.
Huh?
Like, they haven't found him though?
No, it was too dangerous. They kind of gave up trying to get to any of them because it just kept collapsing, and there's houses built all over the top of it, the top of the hill. So if they try to dig it out, it's just caving in.
Yeah.
So
he's
like
sports in that.
Well, like 10 years ago, there, I think it was maybe the History Channel or Discovery Channel, one of them kind of had this proposal where they were going to try to dig holes and send cameras down or something to try to, if they couldn't get the train out, at least, see what was down there and what still remained. But I don't know what happened with that. Nothing ever came of it.
Couldn't get the funding for it, probably. Like, why would we want to fund you going to get this train?
Yeah, and I don't even know how they would get out of it, because literally there is apartment buildings on the, back, almost right up to the bricked-up side. It opens up onto the parking lot for this apartment building, and the other side is just all grown over and, I don't know,
Lost the time at this point.
Pretty much, yeah. And the house, they're not, cheap houses. It's expensive houses built on top of this hill. There's no way that they're gonna just...
Hey, we need to knock your house down.
Yeah.
So that'll be something decades and decades from now. People dig into just randomly be going around and be like, hey, there's a train down here.
Yeah, archaeologists of the future, beware.
Yeah.
Churchill Tunnel.
Oh,
I'm back.
He's back.
I'm back, bitches.
Yes, he's back. Back again. April's back.
Yeah, the Churchill Tunnel was really interesting. Did you tell, I'm sure you told him everything, but did you talk about how, the Discovery Channel is actually going to do an expedition to probe and find the train, and then they discovered it was just too structurally fragile to do that?
Yeah. I knew it was either the History Channel or the Discovery Channel. I couldn't remember which one.
That's very disappointing.
Yeah. Except for the fact that, I mean, you can still walk up to the tunnel. Like, you could go there right now.
Yeah, I told him.
Well, you could, like, walk up to it, but you're just on the outside, though, right?
Yeah. You're not allowed to go in the side that's the caved-in side that's still open, and then the other side's bricked over.
That's disappointing. Just go in when no one's looking. Do some
like, it's not safe. It's filled with water.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I posted the video I was talking about that Mark Holmberg did to our Facebook page if anybody's interested in watching it. It's pretty interesting.
I'm interested.
Well, maybe we should just go over some of the more notable people, some of the other notable people in Hollywood Cemetery, because Jesus Christ, there's a lot of them.
Oh, yeah. You want to hit that first one?
Sure. So one of I'm sure, many governors of Virginia that are buried at Hollywood Cemetery would be that of Fitzhugh Lee. Fitzhugh Lee. That's an interesting name. He was the 40th governor of Virginia. And his term was from 1886 to 1890. He was a Confederate cavalry general and U.S. Army general in the Spanish-American War. He was the son of Sidney Smith Lee, who was a captain in the Confederate Navy and the nephew of General Robert E. Lee.
And he's buried right outside of the circle where Jefferson Davis and his family is buried.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I wonder if that's because of his relation to Robert E. Lee. I assume.
Probably.
Oh, you want to grab the next one?
Yeah, I think did we lose April again?
No, I'm here. I'm just lost. It's fine.
Okay. Well, the next kind of big name is Matthew Fontaine Maury. And he was an American oceanographer, scientist, and educator. After he died at home in Lexington on Saturday, February 1st, 1873, his body was placed on display in the Virginia Military Institute Library, where he had been a professor of physics, in addition to founding the Virginia Agricultural and Mechanical College, now known as
Virginia Tech.
Ooh-ooh! Virginia Tech. Maury was initially buried in the Gillum family vault in Lexington Cemetery across from Stonewall Jackson until, after some delay into the next year, his remains were carried by VMI cadets through the Goshen Pass to Hollywood Cemetery in Richmond. Along the way, the coach stopped at the Goshen Pass, per Maury's request, to pick some of his favorite flowers, rhododendrons, and mountain ivy before continuing onward to Richmond. And he is buried in the President's Circle right next to John Tyler.
That sounds like a fun little jaunt, you know?
It is. Yeah. So I've been through the Goshen Pass a couple of times, and there's a monument to him there, and there are rhododendrons everywhere.
Oh, beautiful. That makes me want to go drive through the Goshen Pass.
Oh, man, the next time we go, we've got to go. That's to get to the Goshen Pass, you have to pass right by the Poorhouse Road Tunnel.
Definitely do. Let's
you
do
also
it.
Know that he was the first talk show host. He was the inventor of the talk show host, and his was called Maury as well.
I'm glad that I'm not physically in the house with you right now.
Just run downstairs and just punch me.
Well, the river that actually carved out the Goshen Pass is called now the Maury River.
And apparently, the Goshen Pass. There is some really good kayaking. I've been on the Maury several times, and it is actually that's where I flipped for the first time, unintentionally. was on the Maury.
I've done a lot of kayaking. Those are some high-class rapids.
It's very rocky.
You have never even
I don't know what I'm talking about.
God help me.
Don't you miss this on a daily basis?
Ooh, yeah. Super long. Super long. Yeah. So there's just a couple more really interesting people that I want to bring up before we go ahead and cut for the evening. But George E. Pickett, who was a Confederate Army general, he was also the namesake of Fort Pickett, which is in Blackstone, Virginia, and which is where Carrie and I hail from. So pretty interesting little thing there.
Yeah.
Humble brag,
led a charge called Pickett's Charge. Go figure. They like to be very creative in their name, call their naming. So Pickett's Charge. Also, Jeb Stuart, James Ewell Brown Stuart, also known as Jeb. He was the chief cavalry for the Confederate Army, and he is also buried there.
You know, if my name was James Ewell Brown, I would also go as Jeb.
I feel like Jeb's a fun name, you know? Like, Jeb's the kind of guy you want to party with.
Is he, though?
Yeah, he is, for sure. He's got a lot of hair. Facial and other.
I'm sure a lot of men back then had a lot of facial hair.
Yeah, oh yeah, they definitely did.
They're growing their playoff beards.
Yep.
That's a sports reference.
All right, everybody. Any last words on Hollywood Cemetery?
I would tell everyone that can to go visit.
Yeah,
it is a must see in Richmond.
It's got one of the best views in the entire city.
Absolutely, right on the Falls of Richmond, and directly across from Belle Isle.
Yep, absolutely. All right, everybody. Well, we really enjoyed having you. Really enjoyed you listening to us this episode. Sorry for all of the problems. Really, just me, because I'm just a big fat problem right now. But either way, thank you so much for listening to us, and we'll be back again next week with even more for you. Bye.
Bye.
See you next week.